This is the Cambridge Assessment International Education, Cambridge IGCSE, June 2023 examination in English as a Second Language. Paper 4. Listening. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Exercise 1. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words or a number for each answer. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. Who did the man go to meet in the park today? B. Which wild creatures did the man see during his visit?
I've had a great morning. I was busy working at home and got loads done before going to my local park. I normally go around lunchtime for a break and a walk with a work colleague, but this time I'd arranged to see a cousin, which I was looking forward to. It was a sunny day too. The park's been left to grow wild in places, and you often see wild creatures there, like swans on one occasion. But I was lucky I had my camera with me today, because some butterflies suddenly appeared. Absolutely beautiful, and much more interesting than the ducks that are sometimes wandering around. I've had a great morning. I was busy working at home and got loads done before going to my local park. I normally go around lunchtime for a break and a walk with a work colleague, but this time I'd arranged to see a cousin, which I was looking forward to. It was a sunny day too. The park's been left to grow wild in places, and you often see wild creatures there, like swans on one occasion. But I was lucky I had my camera with me today, because some butterflies suddenly appeared. Absolutely beautiful. And much more interesting than the ducks that are sometimes wandering around.
Question 2. A. Which product did the man see advertised on TV? B. What did the man like about the advert?
Have you seen that TV advert everyone's talking about?
No, I don't watch TV much. Why?
Well, initially I thought it was for holidays, you know, people sitting under sun umbrellas and so on, or maybe swimming costumes. Then it turned out that it was actually trying to sell fruit drinks. I didn't get that at first.
So did you like the advert?
Well, the colours in it were a bit too bright. They put me off a bit. And there were well-known actors in it, but they didn't get to say much. But the music was stuff I hadn't heard for years, so I immediately downloaded it.
Right.
Have you seen that TV advert everyone's talking about?
No, I don't watch TV much. Why?
Well, initially I thought it was for holidays, you know, people sitting under sun umbrellas and so on, or maybe swimming costumes. Then it turned out that it was actually trying to sell fruit drinks. I didn't get that at first.
So did you like the advert?
Well, the colours in it were a bit too bright. They put me off a bit. And there were well-known actors in it, but they didn't get to say much. But the music was stuff I hadn't heard for years, so I immediately downloaded it.
Right.
Question 3. A. Where did the woman go on her day off? B. What activity did the woman do?
I really wanted to go out somewhere on my day off. The beach is a bit far from where I live. So in the end, I settled for a lake instead. It was within driving distance and better than the local woods, as they're always so busy. Anyway, I was hoping to go cycling when I got there, but that would have meant putting my bike in my small car. So I thought I'd just go walking instead, or maybe hire a boat and go sailing. Then I discovered my bike actually did fit inside the car, so I got to do what I'd wanted after all. I really wanted to go out somewhere on my day off. The beach is a bit far from where I live, so in the end I settled for a lake instead. It was within driving distance and better than the local woods, as they're always so busy. Anyway, I was hoping to go cycling when I got there, but that would have meant putting my bike in my small car. So I thought I'd just go walking instead, or maybe hire a boat and go sailing. Then I discovered my bike actually did fit inside the car, so I got to do what I'd wanted after all.
Question 4. A. Which item of the woman's clothing did she make herself? B. Where did the man buy his new shirt?
Hi, Jane. That's a nice sweater you've got on. Is it one you made?
This? Oh, it was a present. But I think it is handmade, yes. And it kind of goes with the scarf I'm wearing. That was something I knitted at home ages ago.
Yes, that's a similar colour to the gloves you made for me. Anyway, I've just bought myself a new shirt.
Really? From your favourite online shop?
Well, I've had a few things from there that haven't fitted, so someone recommended The Market. They had loads of stuff just my size, including my shirt, and much cheaper than that new department store.
Great!
Hi, Jane. That's a nice sweater you've got on. Is it one you made?
This? Oh, it was a present. But I think it is handmade, yes. And it kind of goes with the scarf I'm wearing. That was something I knitted at home ages ago.
Yes, that's a similar colour to the gloves you made for me. Anyway, I've just bought myself a new shirt.
Really? From your favourite online shop?
Well, I've had a few things from there that haven't fitted, so someone recommended The Market. They had loads of stuff just my size, including my shirt, and much cheaper than that new department store.
Great!
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 2. You will hear a young woman called Jenna talking about her first flying lesson. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words or a number in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Hi, I'm Jenna, and I'd like to tell you about my first flying lesson, learning to fly a small plane. It was a birthday present from my father, who's an airline pilot. Although he tells me very little about his work, other than the places he's visited. However, my uncle is a keen amateur pilot, always flying his small plane at weekends. So maybe listening to him made me want to do this. And my older brother now fancies the idea too. I knew if the weather was bad on the day of my lesson, it might be cancelled. So I listened carefully to the forecast the day before. There'd been strong winds that week, but they'd died down. But then I heard there'd be thick fog the next morning. That was worrying. Anyway, by the time we got to the airfield, there were cloudy skies above us, but we were good to go. When we arrived, I was really excited to see all the different planes coming and going. Then I met my instructor, and he started telling me about my lesson. It all sounded rather technical, to the point where I was scared. But when he told me about the small blue plane we'd be flying in, I felt more optimistic. The first part of my lesson consisted mainly of the instructor showing me around the outside of the plane, and then various parts inside, such as the controls. I found it relatively okay to learn the names of the parts, but trying to recall their functions was a completely different matter, as there were so many of them. That all took up quite a bit of my first lesson. Anyway, there was a surprise in store. As expected, we climbed into the plane, designed so that either of the two people in the front could fly it. Then we took off, with the instructor at the controls, and he made the plane climb into the sky. It was fantastic. But what I hadn't expected was that he then let me use the radio. It was tricky, but I did it. He also explained about the landing, although I didn't actually do that myself. As we were flying along, there were nice views from the plane window of the towns near the airfield. And when we'd flown some distance away, I spotted the coast. After flying over fields for a while, that was particularly spectacular. Then the instructor suddenly suggested I look out of the window and guess the height we were flying at, which of course is very important when you're in the air. Then he showed me how to read the dial that told us the answer, and also the direction we were going. I thought he might ask me the speed we were travelling at, which I definitely have got wrong. Anyway, my first lesson was really successful, mainly because of my instructor. He clearly had a sense of humour, which helped, but above all, the patience that he showed, even when I got things wrong, did wonders for my confidence.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Hi, I'm Jenna, and I'd like to tell you about my first flying lesson, learning to fly a small plane. It was a birthday present from my father, who's an airline pilot. Although he tells me very little about his work, other than the places he's visited. However, my uncle is a keen amateur pilot, always flying his small plane at weekends. So maybe listening to him made me want to do this. And my older brother now fancies the idea too. I knew if the weather was bad on the day of my lesson, it might be cancelled, so I listened carefully to the forecast the day before. There'd been strong winds that week, but they'd died down. But then I heard there'd be thick fog the next morning. That was worrying. Anyway, by the time we got to the airfield, there were cloudy skies above us, but we were good to go. When we arrived, I was really excited to see all the different planes coming and going. Then I met my instructor, and he started telling me about my lesson. It all sounded rather technical, to the point where I was scared. But when he told me about the small blue plane we'd be flying in, I felt more optimistic. The first part of my lesson consisted mainly of the instructor showing me around the outside of the plane, and then various parts inside, such as the controls. I found it relatively okay to learn the names of the parts, but trying to recall their functions was a completely different matter, as there were so many of them. That all took up quite a bit of my first lesson. Anyway, there was a surprise in store. As expected, we climbed into the plane, designed so that either of the two people in the front could fly it. Then we took off, with the instructor at the controls, and he made the plane climb into the sky. It was fantastic. But what I hadn't expected was that he then let me use the radio. It was tricky, but I did it. He also explained about the landing, although I didn't actually do that myself. As we were flying along, there were nice views from the plane window of the towns near the airfield. And when we'd flown some distance away, I spotted the coast. After flying over fields for a while, that was particularly spectacular. Then the instructor suddenly suggested I look out of the window and guess the height we were flying at, which of course is very important when you're in the air. Then he showed me how to read the dial that told us the answer, and also the direction we were going. I thought he might ask me the speed we were travelling at, which I definitely have got wrong. Anyway, my first lesson was really successful, mainly because of my instructor. He clearly had a sense of humour, which helped. But above all, the patience that he showed, even when I got things wrong, did wonders for my confidence.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear exercise 3. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 3. You will hear 6 people talking about performing plays on stage. For each of the speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list, A to G, which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
I belong to a local acting club and we often put on plays for the public to watch. They're always really popular with the audience. Everyone in the club gets anxious about them in case we get something wrong, but we work together really well. I don't think I'd really considered before how challenging it can be to play a completely different character from your own. I'm still not sure whether I'd want to spend my whole working life doing it, though.
Speaker 2.
I regularly act in plays with local groups, and I've rarely felt nervous about standing up and saying my lines on stage in front of an audience. But I realised when I first started that I wasn't brilliant at making myself clear when trying to get a message across, either verbally or through body language. I've now learned one or two techniques for doing that, which professional actors would use without thinking, and which have had a positive effect on me both on stage and in my working life.
Speaker 3.
When we're performing plays at my college, the lead actors are the ones people usually remember. They're pretty good, I must admit, and some will probably go on to find work as actors. They do rehearse hard to prepare for it, too. I've come to realize, though, that they're not the whole production. There's also a lot going on that people don't see, with costumes, lighting, etc. And if those people weren't there cooperating with everyone on stage, we wouldn't even have a play for people to come and watch.
Speaker 4.
I wasn't bothered about performing in our drama club's productions when I first joined. I'd done some acting before and felt I communicated okay with audiences. But I was more interested in helping with costumes or something. Anyway, our club leader finally persuaded me to take on an acting role again. And this time I loved it, to the point where I'm considering it as a way of earning a living in the future. I just need to be sure it's right for me and that I'm not making a mistake.
Speaker 5.
I'd always been pretty sure of myself, so when I first did a performance with my college drama group, I assumed I'd learn my words easily, but also planned to just make them up if I couldn't quite remember them. Luckily, that never happened because I quickly realised if I had got them wrong, it would have made things difficult for people on stage with me. So instead, I spent time repeating my words until they were firmly in my head. That worked well and taught me a useful strategy.
Speaker 6.
I started doing drama at college and discovered I had a talent for acting, or so everyone said, and for learning my lines. I think I got a bit too pleased with myself, though, and when I did get things wrong, I just wouldn't listen to criticism. I've since learnt to improve my attitude by accepting the blame, a useful lesson for the future. Anyway, I found I'm not bad at addressing audiences and getting them to properly understand a play, which is why I'm given good acting roles.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
I belong to a local acting club and we often put on plays for the public to watch. They're always really popular with the audience. Everyone in the club gets anxious about them in case we get something wrong, but we work together really well. I don't think I'd really considered before how challenging it can be to play a completely different character from your own. I'm still not sure whether I'd want to spend my whole working life doing it, though.
Speaker 2.
I regularly act in plays with local groups, and I've rarely felt nervous about standing up and saying my lines on stage in front of an audience. But I realised when I first started that I wasn't brilliant at making myself clear when trying to get a message across, either verbally or through body language. I've now learned one or two techniques for doing that, which professional actors would use without thinking, and which have had a positive effect on me both on stage and in my working life.
Speaker 3.
When we're performing plays at my college, the lead actors are the ones people usually remember. They're pretty good, I must admit, and some will probably go on to find work as actors. They do rehearse hard to prepare for it, too. I've come to realize, though, that they're not the whole production. There's also a lot going on that people don't see, with costumes, lighting, etc. And if those people weren't there cooperating with everyone on stage, we wouldn't even have a play for people to come and watch.
Speaker 4.
I wasn't bothered about performing in our drama club's productions when I first joined. I'd done some acting before and felt I communicated okay with audiences, but I was more interested in helping with costumes or something. Anyway, our club leader finally persuaded me to take on an acting role again, and this time I loved it, to the point where I'm considering it as a way of earning a living in the future. I just need to be sure it's right for me and that I'm not making a mistake.
Speaker 5.
I'd always been pretty sure of myself, so when I first did a performance with my college drama group, I assumed I'd learn my words easily, but also planned to just make them up if I couldn't quite remember them. Luckily, that never happened because I quickly realised if I had got them wrong, it would have made things difficult for people on stage with me. So instead, I spent time repeating my words until they were firmly in my head. That worked well and taught me a useful strategy.
Speaker 6.
I started doing drama at college and discovered I had a talent for acting, or so everyone said, and for learning my lines. I think I got a bit too pleased with myself, though, and when I did get things wrong, I just wouldn't listen to criticism. I've since learnt to improve my attitude by accepting the blame, a useful lesson for the future. Anyway, I found I'm not bad at addressing audiences and getting them to properly understand a play, which is why I'm given good acting roles.
That is the end of exercise 3. In a moment, you will hear exercise 4. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 4. You will hear an interview with a university student called Andrew Harris, who is talking about studying geography. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
I'm with Andrew Harris, who's just completed his first year at university studying geography. Andrew, how did you become interested in the subject?
Well, I did well at it at school, but wasn't actually that keen on it, even though as a family we'd lived in different countries worldwide because of my father's job. In fact, I always had a world map stuck on my bedroom wall to look at where we'd been. Anyway, then my granddad presented me with an album he'd put together for me with stamps from the places we'd lived and other countries too, and I suddenly wanted to discover more.
So you applied to study geography at university?
Yes. I wasn't sure which university to choose, but the geography department where I applied had a great reputation, so I just hoped it'd be the right place for me. I realised there'd probably be plenty of other people wanting to study there too, but still thought I had a chance. Anyway, the interviewers must have liked what I said about my passion for geography as I got in.
What were the other students like?
I'd assumed their knowledge of geography would be far better than mine, but it turned out the studying I'd done at school put me in a good position. And a number had actually transferred onto geography at the university, having already spent a year there doing other courses they weren't enjoying. So that confirmed my choice. And quite a few had done all sorts of stuff before starting uni, but then so had I. They were all really friendly anyway.
And you particularly enjoyed studying cities, didn't you?
Yes. One early project we did was looking at the growth of cities around the world over the centuries. What really struck me was how they're often built as close as possible to rivers or the coast. We also looked at whether other aspects of the area influenced their development, their architecture and so on. That was less easy to reach conclusions about, really, in the time we had.
And you also went into the countryside on a field trip.
Yes, we went in a group with a lecturer and camped near a steep valley. We each had to carry out a research project about a river there, which had once been fast flowing. But gradually it had become thick with mud and the water had almost dried up. So I decided to research the path of the river, which once had boats along it centuries ago. Anyway, while we were there, I found out some key things relating to what I'd chosen to study. So from my point of view, the trip was definitely worth it.
Have you improved your skills on the course?
I'd say so. I mean, I wasn't bad at presenting written work like reports when I started, as I'd learned that at school, but I had to put some work in before I felt confident with statistics, I must admit. But I can now create my own, which will be really helpful, and I'm still working on understanding research papers. I'll get there eventually.
What's the most important thing you've gained this year?
Let's see. We've covered a lot about the extent that natural landscapes influence the culture of its inhabitants. I've also learnt about looking at weather patterns over long periods of time in certain areas. Above all, I've come to realise the potential risks of climate change and where we could be heading, which is vital to our survival after all.
Indeed. So what kind of work might you do after you graduate?
Well, members of my family have suggested teaching, but there are actually far more opportunities available than that. I've become quite interested in nature conservation, although only in my spare time. But I attended a talk recently by a former geography student who now writes articles for newspapers and magazines, and that appeals to me more than anything else, I'd say. So we'll see.
Andrew, thanks.
Now you will hear the interview again.
I'm with Andrew Harris, who's just completed his first year at university studying geography. Andrew, how did you become interested in the subject?
Well, I did well at it at school, but wasn't actually that keen on it, even though as a family we'd lived in different countries worldwide because of my father's job. In fact, I always had a world map stuck on my bedroom wall to look at where we'd been. Anyway, then my granddad presented me with an album he'd put together for me with stamps from the places we'd lived and other countries too, and I suddenly wanted to discover more.
So you applied to study geography at university?
Yes. I wasn't sure which university to choose, but the geography department where I applied had a great reputation, so I just hoped it'd be the right place for me. I realised there'd probably be plenty of other people wanting to study there too, but still thought I had a chance. Anyway, the interviewers must have liked what I said about my passion for geography as I got in.
What were the other students like?
I'd assumed their knowledge of geography would be far better than mine, but it turned out the studying I'd done at school put me in a good position. And a number had actually transferred onto geography at the university, having already spent a year there doing other courses they weren't enjoying. So that confirmed my choice. And quite a few had done all sorts of stuff before starting uni, but then so had I. They were all really friendly anyway.
And you particularly enjoyed studying cities, didn't you?
Yes. One early project we did was looking at the growth of cities around the world over the centuries. What really struck me was how they're often built as close as possible to rivers or the coast. We also looked at whether other aspects of the area influence their development, their architecture and so on. That was less easy to reach conclusions about, really, in the time we had.
And you also went into the countryside on a field trip.
Yes, we went in a group with a lecturer and camped near a steep valley. We each had to carry out a research project about a river there, which had once been fast flowing. But gradually it had become thick with mud and the water had almost dried up. So I decided to research the path of the river, which once had boats along it centuries ago. Anyway, while we were there, I found out some key things relating to what I'd chosen to study. So from my point of view, the trip was definitely worth it.
Have you improved your skills on the course?
I'd say so. I mean, I wasn't bad at presenting written work like reports when I started, as I'd learned that at school, but I had to put some work in before I felt confident with statistics, I must admit. But I can now create my own, which will be really helpful, and I'm still working on understanding research papers. I'll get there eventually.
What's the most important thing you've gained this year?
Let's see. We've covered a lot about the extent that natural landscapes influence the culture of its inhabitants. I've also learnt about looking at weather patterns over long periods of time in certain areas. Above all, I've come to realise the potential risks of climate change and where we could be heading, which is vital to our survival after all.
Indeed. So what kind of work might you do after you graduate?
Well, members of my family have suggested teaching, but there are actually far more opportunities available than that. I've become quite interested in nature conservation, although only in my spare time. but I attended a talk recently by a former geography student who now writes articles for newspapers and magazines, and that appeals to me more than anything else, I'd say. So we'll see.
Andrew, thanks.
That is the end of the interview. In a moment, you will hear exercise 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 5, Part A. You will hear a man called Mark Draper giving a talk about looking at the night sky. Listen to the talk and complete the notes in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
My name's Mark Draper, here to try and encourage you to start looking up at the night sky. It's something I've done for years, and it's absolutely fascinating. However, many people say it's difficult for them to take up the hobby because of light pollution, but this doesn't have to affect what you see. Just switch off everything in your home, and you'll be surprised at the improvement. And most people easily manage to acquire equipment like telescopes once they get into stargazing, so that's not usually a problem. One of the first things I started looking at was the moon, and it still holds the same fascination today. With the naked eye, you can see dark grey patches on its surface, which space scientists centuries ago referred to as seas, as they thought they contained water. You can also see evidence of valleys and even huge holes on the surface, where the moon may have been hit by asteroids. Also, from its appearance in the sky, we might imagine the moon is completely round, but in fact, if you look closely at it, you'll see it isn't, because there are mountains around its outline. If you looked at the sun, which I wouldn't recommend, you might find a similar effect would be created by the atmosphere around it. However, one thing you won't be able to see on the moon is all the waste left by astronauts on successive space missions. It includes things like rockets and backpacks, and it's even been reported there are cameras there, which I didn't expect, as you'd imagine their contents would be of interest back on Earth. Apparently, there are also footprints of astronauts from previous visits. Those could remain there for years, as there's no wind on the moon to blow them away. I've also been taking photographs of the moon for many years. I've taken them of supermoons, for example, and during different phases, and I've been to many different places to take photos. My local park is good at night, as it's almost completely empty, although the most successful one was taken when I was on a clifftop. It looked out over the sea, so I got a much better view than when I was down below on the shore. So, I hope, after this brief introduction, you'll feel inspired to look up at the night sky.
Now you will hear the talk again.
My name's Mark Draper, here to try and encourage you to start looking up at the night sky. It's something I've done for years, and it's absolutely fascinating. However, many people say it's difficult for them to take up the hobby because of light pollution, but this doesn't have to affect what you see. Just switch off everything in your home, and you'll be surprised at the improvement. And most people easily manage to acquire equipment like telescopes once they get into stargazing, so that's not usually a problem. One of the first things I started looking at was the moon, and it still holds the same fascination today. With the naked eye, you can see dark grey patches on its surface, which space scientists centuries ago referred to as seas, as they thought they contained water. You can also see evidence of valleys and even huge holes on the surface, where the moon may have been hit by asteroids. Also, from its appearance in the sky, we might imagine the moon is completely round, but in fact, if you look closely at it, you'll see it isn't, because there are mountains around its outline. If you looked at the sun, which I wouldn't recommend, you might find a similar effect would be created by the atmosphere around it. However, one thing you won't be able to see on the moon is all the waste left by astronauts on successive space missions. It includes things like rockets and backpacks, and it's even been reported there are cameras there, which I didn't expect, as you'd imagine their contents would be of interest back on Earth. Apparently, there are also footprints of astronauts from previous visits. Those could remain there for years, as there's no wind on the moon to blow them away. I've also been taking photographs of the moon for many years. I've taken them of supermoons, for example, and during different phases. And I've been to many different places to take photos. My local park is good at night, as it's almost completely empty. Although the most successful one was taken when I was on a clifftop. It looked out over the sea, so I got a much better view than when I was down below on the shore. So, I hope, after this brief introduction, you'll feel inspired to look up at the night sky.
Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two university students, Sophie and Paul, about their interest in watching the night sky, and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
Hi, Paul. How are you getting on with watching the night sky?
Yeah, fine, thanks, Sophie. I've just been listening to a podcast about it, actually. Really interesting. How about you?
I'm really getting into it. It's fascinating. It's actually made me consider taking a science option at university next term.
Well, I reckon my interest in looking at the night sky partly influenced what I chose to study at uni. Although I enjoyed it, I realised astronomy was not quite right for me, so I went for physics instead, and I've loved it. More than I would have enjoyed maths, I think, which was my original choice.
Right. So what are you looking at in the sky at the moment? I've been watching stars, as some have been really clear in the sky. But now I've moved on to look at satellites, which are fascinating, especially as there's so many of them.
That's a coincidence. I'm looking at those too at the moment, and I might move on to planets next, although I'm not sure how visible some of them will be.
That's amazing! We should compare notes. And if you want to know more, I actually found going to some weekly presentations very useful. They're at the local college, and an improvement on the monthly seminars I've been to there.
Well, I might try them. Thanks. Anyway, I've heard you've got some fantastic photos of the evening sky. Is that right? I'd love to see them.
Oh, yes. Well, look, there's this one of clouds very high in the sky, created from drops of water, but this other one's of what's called noctilucent clouds. They're made of ice, so they look really electric blue, don't they?
Yes, that's a fantastic photo.
Thanks. I have to say, I've learnt an awful lot through looking up at the night sky. It's been amazing. I mean, it's certainly sharpened my observation skills. And because I'm sharing what I see on my blog, my writing skills have really developed too.
Yes, I'm sure. The thing I've found, though, is that my problem-solving skills are much better. You know, working out how to observe the sky.
Now you come to mention it, I'd say it's strengthened my skills in that area too. So, what about looking at the...
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Hi, Paul. How are you getting on with watching the night sky?
Yeah, fine, thanks, Sophie. I've just been listening to a podcast about it, actually. Really interesting. How about you?
I'm really getting into it. It's fascinating. It's actually made me consider taking a science option at university next term.
Well, I reckon my interest in looking at the night sky partly influenced what I chose to study at uni. Although I enjoyed it, I realised astronomy was not quite right for me, so I went for physics instead, and I've loved it. More than I would have enjoyed maths, I think, which was my original choice.
Right. So what are you looking at in the sky at the moment? I've been watching stars, as some have been really clear in the sky. But now I've moved on to look at satellites, which are fascinating, especially as there's so many of them.
That's a coincidence. I'm looking at those too at the moment, and I might move on to planets next, although I'm not sure how visible some of them will be.
That's amazing! We should compare notes. And if you want to know more, I actually found going to some weekly presentations very useful. They're at the local college, and an improvement on the monthly seminars I've been to there.
Well, I might try them. Thanks. Anyway, I've heard you've got some fantastic photos of the evening sky. Is that right? I'd love to see them.
Oh, yes. Well, look, there's this one of clouds very high in the sky, created from drops of water, but this other one's of what's called noctilucent clouds. They're made of ice, so they look really electric blue, don't they?
Yes, that's a fantastic photo.
Thanks. I have to say, I've learnt an awful lot through looking up at the night sky. It's been amazing. I mean, it's certainly sharpened my observation skills. And because I'm sharing what I see on my blog, my writing skills have really developed too.
Yes, I'm sure. The thing I've found, though, is that my problem-solving skills are much better. You know, working out how to observe the sky.
Now you come to mention it, I'd say it's strengthened my skills in that area too. So what about looking at the...
That is the end of exercise 5 and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.